So, can you compost in the wintertime?
Sure. The wintertime seems like, you know, there's not much to do in the garden, but stuff is happening in the garden, for sure. The you build your pile in the fall. You know, if you're making a compost pile, you layer it up. And in the wintertime, it should stay warm enough. You know, if you've got it built right, it'll stay warm enough through the winter that it's microbially, you know, biologically active all winter long. And in the spring, you got the beautiful composting.
Is there some green stuff that you add to the compost pile to get it to run better?
You can get different inoculants, you know. You can add, sometimes people buy worm castings for that purpose, or, you know, you can
worm
get...
Worm castings do what?
That it's like an inoculant. If you're making tea, you add a tea bag, you know, that's a terrible analogy. What's an inoculant for a compost pile? It's like a microbial starter dose, you know, like why people eat yogurt to maintain their intestinal health. You know, you can do the same thing with your compost and add beneficial things like that. And it helps, you know, particularly if your compost is sluggish for some reason, but more often than not, that can be remedied with a simple wave of the pitchfork. You know, it needs some air, or you've got too much mucky stuff and not enough carbon-based stuff that's kind of absorbing the moisture.
So what about in urban areas where there's raccoons and rats and bunny rabbits and cats that want to eat your compost?
Right, those are all issues to be concerned about as you're composting in a city area. With aeration, you know, with keeping the compost pile active, you're preventing, you know, a certain level of that. You know, if it's a disturbed zone, the rats aren't going to make a nest in it because you're in it all the time. You're poking a fork in there. And
a pitchfork, not a fork like you.
A pitchfork, right, exactly. Not a, yeah.
Breakfast. Right.
A big fork, something to scare the
rats.
What about
coffee grinds? Can you overdo it with coffee grinds?
Coffee grinds make great compost, all that stuff. The key to a compost pile is the balance between what they call the carbon-based stuff and the nitrogen-based inputs. And nitrogen is a lot of what's coming out of your kitchen. You know, the cabbage cores and the lettuce scraps and the vegetable matter that's coming off your cutting board, the stuff that doesn't go in the skillet, that's all basically nitrogen. Grass clippings are nitrogen, stuff that is green when as it's growing.
So why is nitrogen so good for plants? Every time I hear about strawberry plants, I hear over and over again, they love nitrogen.
Love nitrogen. Nitrogen is one of three nutrients, nitrogen, potassium, and phosphorus. And balanced with that is the carbon is kind of the foundation of those three nitrogen nutrient cycles. So the key to a successful compost pile is that balance between carbon and nitrogen. You know, just like you have a carbon cycle, you know, we're all worried about carbon in the atmosphere. Composting is on a very small scale, you know, even a backyard compost, you're taking part in that compost, or in that carbon cycle.
Does it produce oxygen?
Ultimately, the plant photosynthesis is what produces the oxygen.
Okay.
In terms of, like, air that we breathe.
Okay. So what do we watch out for? What do we... Like, we don't want to put old bikes in the compost pile and big, thick branches. And what do we want to avoid in compost piles?
Great. Things not to put in there is, like, greasy meat, you know, cheese. Those don't compost very well. Oils and fats don't really compost. They go rancid.
Okay.
What composts well is the vegetable matter. The stuff that grows out of the ground is what goes back in the ground. It's as simple as that.
Okay.
Yeah. If you're doing it on a kitchen scale, as you collect it, you know, what goes in the bucket on the counter that you keep under your kitchen sink and take it out with the trash once a week, the things that go in that compost bucket are the things that are going to go in your compost pile. And the organisms that are breaking it down are the organisms that are also a part of making those plants grow. So it's a complete cycle in and of itself.
How about seasoned manure? You know, like you could put layers of leaves and food and leaves and food. What about seasoned manure, two-year-old manure in a compost pile?
That's absolutely.
But you don't want to put fresh manure.
You can. Sure. Either way, it'll compost. I mean, seasoned manure is another way of saying it's been compost. It's already been through one stage of composting. But yeah, you can take fresh horse manure and make a layer of it. If you're doing that method, if you have a source of, like, if you get bags of leaves, or, you know, if you have a source for manure, you know, a lot all at once, like if you know somebody with a barn, you can get some horse manure, you make a layer of that material.
Okay, do you have a compost song?
I can sing a song about compost. On nonlinear radio. Yeah, that'd be great. I should write a song that tells the story of making a compost pile. There's a lot of good information on the web. You know, if you search for, go to the Rodale Institute on how to build a compost pile, you'll see pictures of all this stuff that I'm trying to explain to you. You know, it's difficult over the radio.
So what's a good website?
Oh, look up the Rodale Institute, RODALE.
So it's really funny about live radio is that it is the visual impact.
Right, trying to paint a picture with words.
So go ahead, sing it. Sing
the blast furnace.
Sing it.
Warm days next April, with my back to the sun and my mind in the sky, preparing the soil for another cooperative endeavor for survival and some early spring kale. Putting seed in the ground, it's a little like kissing. It takes a soft touch and attention to the smallest detail. And if you rush things and plant seed just a little too early, plants grow at all, then they're likely to fail. But now the rain comes and the wind blows, and I welcome it all. Let the rain soak the soil, let the wind take my hair. Set a saucer of beer out for the slugs' garden party, and I'll drink to their health when I'm sitting out there. As the moon becomes full and the seed begins sprouting, you'll find me pulling weeds in the silver moonlight. And you can sit by the fire and sing me a lullaby, for I'd rather be sung to than to bid you goodbye. Now the marigolds and the zinnias, they're sprinkled among tomatoes and corn that are almost knee-high. The peas on the vine, they're just getting heavy as the morning sun sparkles in the dew on the vine. Be patient till harvest and don't get frustrated as the starlings and the sparrows get up before dawn. There's plenty for all, and still more coming, but the memories of last winter still linger on. Shedding the hair leaves, and the last of the broccoli cold frames are on. The frost on the vine is just getting heavy
as the morning sun sparkles in the cold dawn. And I'm in my house, bundled under the covers, with a homebrew and a good book and my favorite socks on. And the last of the warblers I loved in the springtime are all but a memory that still lingers on. But I'll be digging the garden in the warm days next April, with my back to the sun and my mind in the sky, preparing the soil for another cooperative endeavor for survival and some early spring kale.
That was
there's a picture of the calendar. You know, gardening is all about timing and seasons. You plant your peas in the spring and your beans in the summer. You know, you spread your compost in the fall and build it up through the winter and turn it in the spring. You know, there's a time. What's that Pete Seeger song? Turn, 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 right? There's a time and everything.
Well, it's time to talk to us about, because when you first told me this, I had no idea what you were talking about. Talk to us about the worms.
Worms.
And worm casings that you were cranking out in Athens, Ohio.
Yes. The worm method of composting is uniquely suited for urban homemaking gardeners. You know, if you got the kitchen garden out back, you know, and particularly with an urban system, it may not be practical to have an open pile. Like you mentioned, you get raccoons and rats and stuff coming around.
Well, what about the barrel thing that you turn? Is that like you put?
I wouldn't put worms in one of those. That might be
too. Can you use that
dynamic
for composting too?
Yeah, you can do that for composting.
Okay.
I wouldn't put worms in one of those barrels.
No, they get dizzy. And so, okay, now let's say for our audience that might not know anything about this, let's start from the beginning. Where did you get your first thing of worms?
The red wigglers that you use for worm composting, you get them from another worm farmer. That's a different kind of worm than what you're going to dig up on a rainy day in your garden. That night crawler is different than a red wiggler. And a red wiggler is what you use for the composting. But you can get those from another worm farmer. And, you know, if you contact Blast Furnace Radio, you can get in touch with me and get some worms that way. That's a good way. And a home composting system based on worms is as simple as one of those sweater totes. You get a plastic container with a lot of surface area. You know, something rectangular and basically flat, but something that'll still fit under your sink in the kitchen. Someplace that's handy.
How about an old refrigerator turned on its side so it's like an open bed?
That might be bigger than most households need, but yeah, that's, you know, any kind of material that you can get a hold of to basically make a bed where the worms can live in. You know? You want it to, and like any compost pile, you got to be concerned about airflow. There's, you know, you don't want it to go anaerobic, is what it's called, is when you start composting without oxygen. That's when you get into the bad smells and the mucky, gooey stuff, you know.
And the bad fungi.
It's not even fungi, it's some other kind of organism entirely. So you got to keep that soil aerated. So something big like a refrigerator might present a certain challenge. You're going to be a little more actively involved in it. But I like the 18-gallon sweater tote, I call them. It's just like those Rubbermaid containers. You get them at the hardware store for $5, you know, $10 probably here. And with a handful of worms and the bedding for starter, you can get started right away adding kitchen compost to that system. Bedding might be something like shredded newspaper, or, you know, if you have hay and stuff, that some kind of, we're back to that carbon nitrogen balance we were talking about when you're building a pile. Bedding is basically a carbon based material. In Athens, when I was collecting coffee grinds from a coffee shop for composting, you know, on kind of a cottage scale for, you know, a larger garden system than just a backyard garden, The filters, the paper filters that came with the coffee grinds, that acted as my carbon-based material that the worms were laying eggs in, using as nurseries to raise the young. You know, that's what the bedding does. And the food is then the nitrogen material, the grinds themselves, the apple cores and muffins that got thrown in with the coffee grinds, the kitchen scraps coming off the cutting board, you know, that kind of material. The bacteria and the fungi that are active in that pile, you know, this is a complete ecosystem. The worm is just it's like the blue whale in the ocean. You know, it's just the big organism that you can see. And for every one of those, there are millions and millions of smaller organisms that are playing, you know, that are also part of that entire system. And the key is to manage that within a certain set of parameters. You don't want it to get bogged down with water and become too wet or too dry. You know, you want to keep it within a certain temperature range, and it likes basically the same kind of temperature that you and I do.
Oh.
You know, worms are people too.
Okay.
They don't like too much water. They don't like too little water. They don't like it too cold.
98.6.
Room temperature. Comfortable room temperature.
Room temperature, that would be like 70 degrees.
Yeah, 70 degrees. 70 degrees.
So can it freeze and stop everything?
No. You really don't want a compost pile to freeze, particularly with worms. I mean, the worms, if it gets below 40 degrees for any length of time, they'll die.
Okay.
You know, and below 50, things really start to slow down. Any composting process generates a little bit of heat on its own. You know, the action of the bacteria, of the microbes in the soil, is a it's a metabolic process. Just like we're warm-blooded, a compost pile can be thought of as warm-blooded in that same kind of way. Really, because it generates its own heat at a certain phase in its cycle. Air, the amount of air in the system is very dependent on that. Just like an engine, you got fuel, air, and spark, right? And spark in a compost pile is just the living organism, just a spark of life. The fuel is the kitchen scrap you put in there, that balance between carbon and nitrogen. And air is just air, you know, it's what you do with a pitchfork. One of the advantages of a worm system, you know, that a lot of kitchens set up, is that the worms do some of that aeration process for you. A larger pile in your backyard that's being composted, like the bumper sticker says, compost happens. It'll happen a lot more efficiently and a lot more effectively if you operate the pitchfork every once in a while. But if that thing's sitting in the corner collecting dust, compost will happen. It may take a while. It'll take longer.
Okay, so when you're you're getting red worms,
yeah,
and you're putting them onto a bed, as in hay or ripped up paper, and then you add on like different table scraps. And is there a point at which you're done, or is there a point at which you take the worms out, or?
Eventually that box will fill up, yeah. And there's a, you know, we can go through some harvesting process techniques if you want. But yeah, when it fills up, you want to come up with a way to harvest the finished material. Maybe in the spring and summer we'll get organized some workshops and some how-tos. You know, people can go to the website and find out a calendar date, and you know.
It's in Victory Gardens from the Depression. I mean, now more and more and more people are turning towards trying to figure out how in the heck they're going to raise food to bring down their food bill. And the stuff that you've been talking about is so basic, but we're so separated from our primary tasks. We don't make our own food, we don't make our own bread, we don't have our own babies, or hospitals make us sick, or schools make us dumb. I mean, obviously this is not high tech.
It's not high tech, but there's a lot of experiential knowledge that, you know, membership in an organization like PASA or the Pittsburgh Gardening Experiment, you know, some of these agricultural organizations can help you through that. You know, it's people to talk to when you come up with a, well, how do I overcome this challenge? You know, I've got some kind of fruit fly growing in my compost pile. What do I do now? You know, or my tomatoes are wilting. What do I, you know, what do I do? What do you do? There's sources for that information for sure. Or those gardening organizations, you know, just hang out at the community garden in your neighborhood. Pittsburgh is full of community gardens, and there's more popping up all the time.
Or maybe we get somebody who's agoraphobic and they can answer the phone all the time.
A 24-hour hotline for, you know, everybody's got their piece of the puzzle to contribute. But yeah, you're right. They call it the simple life, but it can get pretty complicated.
And it's a lot of work.
And it's a lot of work. And it's a different kind of work than you got to be out the door at 8 in the morning to beat rush hour. Different kind of life.
So give us a website for the Red Worms.
Wormsandbats.com.
Wow. Is that yours?
That's my website.
Okay. Wormsandbats.
Yeah.
.com.
Maybe you'll put a link to it on Blast Furnace.
Definitely. This is organic. Okay, well, why don't you sing for us another song about going back to the earth and not going back to the office, and
right.
This will be another edition of The River here in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, with Vincent Irene and Matt Peters. Again, we're in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where there are more mavericks than there's curls on my head.
There ain't nothing in the world I like better than bacon, lettuce, and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you a ripe one. Don't pick a hard one, you can plant them in the spring. Eat them all summer, all winter without them. It's a culinary bummer. I forget all about the sweating and digging. Every time I go out to get me a big one. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'll I be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that your money can't buy, and that's true love and a homegrown tomato. You can go out to eat, well that's for sure, but it's nothing that a homegrown tomato won't cure. Put them in a salad, put them in a stew, you can make your very own tomato juice. Now if I could exchange this life I lead, I'd be a Johnny Tomato seed. 'Cause I know what this country needs, it's a homegrown tomato in every yard you see. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes, what'll I be without a homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that your money can't buy, and that's true love and a homegrown tomato. Out in a box in a cemetery, out in the garden, it'd be much better than I could be pushing up a homegrown tomatoes. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes, what'll I be without a homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that your money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.
Well, speaking of pushing up daisies, we got J.D. Salinger and Howard Zinn, and we remember them and all that they have taught us. And someone who's still alive who's taught me a lot about all this is Wendell Berry. We don't want to forget the tree sitters down there in West Virginia just came down from their tree after a week of stopping Massey from blasting off the mountain there in Coal River Mountain. And now they're cooling their heels in jail, and people are trying to bail them out. And so while we do all of this in attempting to survive and to be close to the earth, remember all those who are trying to save it. If you're trying to find out information about those folk who came down from their tree sitting, it's climatezero.org, climategroundzero.org. Again, this is Vincent Irene and
Matt Peters.
And Caitlin.
And Caitlin Greer, Scotty Irene, in the background doing the brain work. Thank you.